lead bank and agent bank liability. We need to ensure that we manage all the rights and obligations of all of the parties involved in any international finance transaction and limit any potential party liability insofar as possible. What we're trying to do with these transactions, and in particular the more complex transactions, is identify all of the relevant risk and then allocate that risk in particular through the construction and execution of well-drafted documentation. That's what lawyers do. That's what we do in the private law area. We're identifying all of the parties. We're identifying all of the rights, duties, and obligations of the parties, and we record that in the documentation. The specific issue that arises in the finance area is that if we have made facilities available, either under a loan deal or under a bond capital market deal, what if something goes wrong? Specifically, what will happen is the borrower of the syndicated loan or the issuer of the bonds, notes and commercial paper goes into default. And then, if in the worst case, actually goes into insolvency. The question is, who's then liable for that, and how can the other lenders in the syndicated lending situation or investors in the bond, note and commercial paper program situation, who can they recover from? So what we have to do is identify the potential parties, potential actions, potential claims, and then in the course of preparing the documentation, ensure that we can limit their liability as far as possible so that all potential liability is effectively allocated. What we can do is this. In the paper I've provided, we're going to look at this in terms of five key heads of liability. Common law misrepresentation, statutory misrepresentation or deceit, that's section 21 of the Misrepresentation Act 1967. Statutory agency liability, fiduciary liability, and then potential regulatory liability. And I look at each of those in further detail in the paper. Now, what we can then do is this. We're acting for our specific client. We're assuming for the purposes of all of these classes that we're acting for the lead bank, the arranging bank, either in the loan deal or in the bond deal. In that case, how can we limit our party's liability so that there is no unnecessary, unexpected risk undertaken and possible loss that may arise? We can do this through a series of three principal sets of provisions: limited duty clauses, or what we call basis clauses, limited liability clauses, and then other exclusions, but we just have to be careful that we stay within the limitations on the limiting of liability. So, limited duty or basis clauses. The simplest way to limit liability is to basically narrow the duty of care, narrow the scope of any responsibility, so therefore you cannot be held to have breached something if you were not responsible for it in the first place. So the easiest, most simplest initial way to deal with this is through limited duty clauses or basis clauses. For example, no duty, information supply, own credit assessment, no reliance, no fiduciary duty. What we can do is this, specifically with regards to the arranging bank and the lead bank, and then separately, the agent bank. So we have the arranging bank or the lead bank who sets up the syndicate or who sets up the bond, note or commercial paper program. When they're up and running, these are then administered by the agent bank. So we need to think about the lead bank or the arranging bank and the agent bank. What we can do is this. In each of these cases, we can specify their specific responsibilities and then exclude all of the other things that they are not liable for, and we do that initially through these limited duty clauses. Secondly, we can have specific express limited liability provisions in the contractual documentation. Exclusion clauses are completely legal and valid under English law, and what we can do is we can support the exclusion clauses with indemnity clauses. So even if the exclusion clauses don't work and someone's held liable, they can still recover the funds back through an indemnity. We can also protect set-off rights. There's other forms of procedural remedy called estoppel, and we have separately what we call contributory negligence. Under English law, it's the Law Reform Contributory Negligence Act 1945. And what that means is this. If there is loss, what we can still argue, if the court determines that loss has been suffered, it can allocate fault across different parties. So instead of being 100% liable, party might be 50%. Or if the person making the claim was held to be contributory liable, they may be held 50-50, or even less. We can also exclude liability, but there's controls on the exclusion of liability, so we need to consider the limitations on limiting liability. We do that under point four. Construction contra proferentem. If you've drafted the exclusion clauses, they will be interpreted against you contra proferentem. There's certain things we cannot exclude liability for under English law. Fraud or fraudulent misrepresentation, criminal liability, statutory liability, where the clause itself is misrepresented, or where there was some separate form of oral warranty or oral undertaking. We also then have to consider various statutory controls. We have what are called the Consumer Contracts Regulations. That was 1999. These have now been absorbed into the Consumer Credit Act 2015. These only apply in retail or consumer situations, which will not apply in the cases that we're looking at in international finance. We have to consider the Unfair Contract Terms Act 1977, which imposes controls on the exclusion of liability. It basically imposes a reasonableness test, so we can look at the nature of the reasonableness test. We specifically then have negligence and possible misrepresentation under the Misrepresentation Act 1967, which expressly incorporates, imports the reasonableness test from the Unfair Contract Terms Act, so we can look at that as well. There's then a series of important case law in this area. I've just summarised some of them here. I discuss a lot of them in the chapter, as well as I provided a separate summary note on the system, which looks at a number of the other big major cases in this area. So we have Recall Cotronis, we have JP Morgan versus Springwell, we have IFE Funds versus Goldman Sachs, PK Intermark, Deepak, and Abu Dhabi versus Morgan Stanley. What most of these essentially do, apart from the small qualification in the last one, is that they uphold the effectiveness of all of these other provisions I've mentioned above. They uphold the no basis, the no duty clauses, they uphold the exclusion clauses, and they apply the exclusion reasonableness very fairly and reasonably, almost never upholding that in favour of the claimants in this case, simply because what we're doing is we're dealing with large professional institutions, dealing with usually expert investment clients or professional clients, which changes the nature of the relationship, and it becomes very difficult to establish duties of care, misrepresentation, careless or anything else of any form. What essentially happens in all the key cases, they completely support the application and operation of the basic contractual provisions we're looking at in these cases. We then have the remedies, and all I've done is simply summarise these. If anything does go wrong, what have we got? You've got your default clauses in the loan documentation and in the capital market documentation. Usually five key remedies we can identify: suspension or withholding of further advance, cancellation of obligation to lend, acceleration of repayment, rescission of the loan documentation, and then finally, if necessary, we go to court and we sue for damages on breach of contract. You have a key paper on this, which summarises out of all of the core points. You have some additional references to some of the other cases and specific legal points that we're going to refer to, and then some other additional supporting material on the system.